Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page and click Share This.
Well, everybody knows there's something wrong with it. People disagree about what exactly is wrong with it. We hear about falling test scores. We hear about kids not graduating. We hear about, well, just the chasm between what kids used to know graduating from, say, the eighth grade or high school and what they know today graduating from the eighth grade or high school. So no one can deny that something's gone wrong in American education. What that is difficult to tell. We're going to talk about traditional education versus progressive education for the next half hour of the program. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Shane Rosenthal is our guest, producer of the network radio program The White Horse Inn. He currently serves on the board of Providence Christian Academy in St. Louis, and he's author of an article in the latest issue of Modern Reformation magazine titled Dewey's Copernican Revolution. Shane, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Thanks. Always great to be with you.
Everybody knows there's something wrong. If you had to name one thing that you think is fundamentally wrong with education today, what would it be, Shane?
The main thing that's wrong with contemporary education today, in my book, is that it's child-centered.
And really?
That's the problem of the last, say, 100 years. And you guys recently interviewed a gal named Jean Twenge, which was the focus on the narcissism revolution. Or, I'm sorry, what's her book called? The Narcissism Epidemic?
Yeah.
Well, we had her on our program as well, and the thing that she is sort of documenting is not a new phenomenon. And one of the things I sort of walk through in my article is some of the theories of philosophies of education that sort of popped on the scene about 100 years ago, and in particular, John Dewey's thought. You know, he wanted to sort of change the structure of education so that it was no longer text or teacher-centered. That's where the sort of the gravity was in the classroom, and the student revolves around the teacher or the text, and he wanted to change that so that the student became the center, and then the teacher sort of became an assistant to sort of help him with the playlists on his iPod. That's sort of the Copernican shift that I describe. He actually calls it in 1899 a Copernican revolution that he was seeking to change. And I think the problem with American education today is that we are just living out the effects of that revolution.
Okay. What was education, by and large, before Dewey got a hold of it?
Well, by and large, you go back to, if you want to go back to ancient Greece, you talk about authority and not child-centered in the way it was carried out. The schoolmaster, the tutor who was hired had a stick, and he was there to make sure that your child was getting the education done, was learning his lessons, and was reporting to the school. And so it was very, very strict, and there were high expectations. And throughout the Middle Ages, that sort of model was carried on. It wasn't for the masses; it was only for those who had the means to do it. But one of the things we've seen over the centuries, really, is that as education became available more and more to the masses, it's sort of been reduced in its quality. So, for example, in the Middle Ages, you have this emphasis on the trivium, the grammar, the logic, the rhetoric. Just look at the script in the old codexes of throughout the Middle Ages. Very high quality, very ornate, because it was an art and it was something that took patience and it was careful. Today, no one has that kind of writing. Look at the poetry in the Civil War era. Letters written from husbands during the time of the Civil War. Just even the way it's written, it's beautiful. Not only in content, but in style. And a lot of these guys didn't get past the eighth grade. So we've we have more people going to school, but less quality in terms of the curriculum, and that's part of the problem.
All right. Now that when Dewey got hold of it, he had some, I mean, I don't know if he was casting aspersions on traditional education, whether he was fairly characterizing it, or whether he saw it clearly for what it really was and simply rejected it. Which is it?
Well, I think there are some comments in the 1700s, for example, that we were beginning to see a shift in education before the time of Dewey. So 100 years before Dewey, there are folks who you know, sort of comment that education is becoming sort of a game. People want to play. They want to learn history by a card game. There are all kinds of these comments. Basically, I think the pivotal shift is that Enlightenment shift where man becomes the measure of all things. God and his authority is sort of now on the way out, and man and his authority is on the way in. And so the pedagogical theory, that is the theory of education, sort of takes a while to shift over to that new philosophy where man is the measure. And that theory of education, where the child is the center, is just an outworking of that previous Enlightenment spirit. Does that answer your question?
Well, yeah. So when Dewey looks at reforming education or revolutionizing education, what does he dispense with?
Well, he says that there are a few categories. There are a few things that he wants to sort of rethink or tweak, and that is he doesn't like kids being imposed on from above. So the teacher imposes information onto the child. He imposes texts to the child. He acquires things in the old traditional model, acquires things by skill and by drill, but those are all impositions. Whereas in his model, he wanted to sort of, instead of impositions from above, he said, what we need to have the kids do is to express their own individuality. They need to learn through experience. The teacher needs to make vital appeals. They need to make the most of the present. Education should be something about the present experience, not a preparation for the future. Now, think about that in terms of a lot of the museums for kids. There's a lot of hands-on museums, lots of experience. That is all very Deweyan. Think about the life in the classroom where they say, well, you know, it's not a dull lecture. It's much more interactive. All those are very Deweyan ideas. But the overall shift is the child being entertained now? And if the child is not being entertained, if the child is just sort of tuning out, then the Deweyish approach would be to say that's not effective.
This is actually kind of starting to make some sense to me. You know, people puzzle over why in math and science, Americans are lagging behind the rest of the world.
Right.
And I guess the question is, is it because math and science are subjects that kind of have to be taught from the top down? You don't intuit these things.
With math, you just can't get around it. You're going to have to sit and do the memorization work required to understand the multiplication table. You're going to have to sit and think. And one of the writers that I really have profited from over the years is Mortimer Adler on this issue. And he says in one of his essays, in 1940-something, he wrote that America is becoming a kindergarten. It's all got to be fun. But he said thinking is always difficult work. If we're going to put time and energy into thinking, into applying the muscle that is inside our brain, is inside our head, then we have to do hard work. We have to think and apply ourselves to do that. And if it was if left to themselves, kids would never think. They sort of have to be prodded into doing it. And that's where I think that's one of the problems of the Deweyish approach. Because in his approach, if the child's the center, then they will only practice that which is appealing to them, that which is fun for them. But if fun is the center of education, then real education really isn't going to happen.
Shane Rosenthal is our guest. We're talking about traditional education versus progressive education. Now, I know that all of you have an opinion on this. Whether or not you have kids still in school, you can remember your school days. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. This is Issues Etc. live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 10th of December. I'm Todd Wilkin. I want to hear from you about progressive education. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org is our in-studio email address, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Shane Rosenthal is our guest producer of the network radio program, The White Horse Inn. He currently serves on the board for Providence Christian Academy in St. Louis, and he's author of an article in the latest issue of Modern Reformation magazine titled Dewey's Copernican Revolution. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Well, I was educated in precisely the Deweyan system. It had to be fun. It had to be relevant. As a consequence, I will admit readily to you, I didn't actually learn a lot. By the time I got out of high school, I didn't really know that much. Much of my education has been either a secondary, that is, where real education was still taking place, tertiary, I mean, doing some graduate work, or remedial as an adult, reading things I should have read when I was in junior high as an adult, classics of Western civilization, learning only because I had to teach my kids while we're doing homework things like math and some science. In fact, just last night, the question came up with my 13-year-old son. We were doing a little algebra. We were doing a little, slope-intercept formula, things like that, some simple stuff. And he asked the classic question, how am I ever going to use this in the rest of my life? I'd like to know what Shane Rosenthal would say to my son in answer to that question. When we come back, we'll talk more about traditional education versus progressive education. Stay tuned. All in all, you're just a Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
Think big screens belong in the movie theater, not at church? Think garage bands should stay in the garage, not be jamming in front of the altar? Hey, we do too. Come join us at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, for services that are reverent and relevant, vibrant and traditional. Divine service on Saturday at 6 p.m., on Sunday morning at 7:45 and 10, with Sunday school and Bible class in between at 9. Join us. Not a big screen or garage band in sight. Promise.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Holidays can bring healing and hope.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Although many abortion providers deny it, abortion hurts women both physically and mentally. Millions of women have experienced depression and feelings of sadness and loss as a result of choosing abortion. For those with unresolved grief, holidays and events that bring happiness and treasured memories for others may conjure up just the opposite. Typical holiday scenes of children sitting on Santa's lap or a tree with baby's first Christmas ornaments can all be painful reminders of a child lost to abortion. May the peace of this holiday season bring healing in abortion's aftermath.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Shane Rosenthal is our guest. We're talking about traditional versus progressive education. Zach is listening right here in Collinsville, Illinois. Hi, Zach.
Hi. I'm a college student in education, and I'm a confessional Lutheran, and I love your show. I try to listen as much as I can. And my professor at school is actually Lutheran also, LCMS. And, I mean, I know Dewey has a lot of bad stuff out there on, you know, religion and things like that. But I think, especially like in this book, Experience in Education and the School and Society, he actually explains that he's not concerned about so much about the individuality of each student and whatever they just feel like doing. But with his methods, I mean, he would be showing them from the start how they would use algebra in real life. His education models model real life instead of just, I guess, a lecture-based kind of thing. It actually puts the students in a situation where they need to solve the problems and figure out why they would be needing algebra in life.
Zach, thank you very much. And thanks for listening in Collinsville, Zach. Shane.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary of Dewey's approach. Dewey was very pragmatic. He was very much influenced by sort of a William James approach, philosophy of pragmatism. And he really did have that it's what can you learn right now that will have practical value. And especially that was important for Dewey was sort of that train them in the vocational arts, train the kids to be effective workers for the new society. He was sort of a new, almost a communist in his approach, you know, the neo-communism, socialism, and he was preparing for this new dawn. And it dawned on him early on that the best way to sort of prepare for this new society was to tweak sort of the approaches to pedagogy and to the theories of education. So how does that, you know, is everything that he said bad? No, not necessarily. But his antipathy to the lecture is something that we as Christians should say is right out. and the fact that, you know, he doesn't want to have the teacher impose a text on the child is sort of not classically Christian. We, as Christians, believe that that children should be instructed in the Bible, and that text is above the child. That it has more to say about life, wisdom, the gospel, all those things, and that should be something that the child should be told to memorize, even though it's not fun. With regard to your question, Todd, how can algebra be fun? Why is it important?
The question was, how am I going to use this later in life? I mean, it's a very Deweyan question.
And that's a very pragmatic question, although it's still a relevant question. And generally what I say, you know, I serve on the board of a classical Christian school, and so that question comes up a lot from the, you know, in terms of people questioning the curriculum. And so what we always say is, not everyone will go into math or engineering. Some will. And especially for those who will, it will be very valuable. For those who don't ever use it again, it is extremely valuable, just like weightlifting is valuable for people. It can be boring. Regular exercise can be boring and routinized, but it is important for the exercise of the muscles because it makes you more healthy. In the same way, the brain is a muscle, and it must be exercised. And if you don't exercise the brain with difficult, challenging thought, then it will become a limp muscle, and you won't be able to think clearly in anything you choose to do.
So it's not just the very pragmatic, will I use this in my chosen employment in my future life, but it is also, is this subject, this problem, this drill, whatever it is that faces me that seems irrelevant to me today and tomorrow, is it in fact relevant because it is teaching me to think?
It's also teaching me about something about the real world to which I belong. And whether you like it or not, you need to think about how the world is, how it's structured, its logic, the way it is, its truth, its goodness, its beauty. Those things are important for everyone to think about, and each individual person will pursue in an individual vocation based on their interests, but you give everybody the grounding in the good, the true, the beautiful facts and logic and texts
history, all those things that have shaped the world we live in today, because those are true facts about the real world we live in. They're objective facts outside of you and me, and if we only learn those things that we want to learn, then we would be very shallow and spiritually and educationally malnourished people.
I'm a bit concerned, and as I'm sure you are, Shane, about Dewey's approach toward, I guess you could say, training for some sort of vocational art. It strikes me as somewhat deterministic, and it strikes me as the child is here to serve the greater needs of perhaps the state, or maybe put softer, society.
Yeah, there is a lot of that in Dewey, and a lot of the sort of pedagogical theories that come out of that time period. And it seems to me that the cure for it all is to just get back to, look, education's not always going to be fun. It's not all about me, and it's sometimes if you listen to the words of the teacher, sometimes you'll be shocked and you'll be thrown off your horse and you'll realize something interesting that you never would have thought of, you never would have heard unless you had stopped to listen. And one of those things is for example, is the Christian gospel. I mean, you know of the sort of things that we've done on White Horse over the years where I'll interview Christians and young Christians, and they don't know what the gospel is. They've never heard of important doctrines. I was recently at a Christian Bible college interviewing teens as we're about to go through a series on the book of Galatians. So I ask, 12 or 15 young Bible college students, and ask them, have you ever read the book of Galatians? And if so, what do you think, what's it about? And I think only 2 out of 12 had any idea of what that book was about. And that is the state we're in, because even the youth groups, churches, they're sort of imbibing in this Deweyan spirit, which is to say, let's make Bible study, let's make youth group, let's make our sermons fun and enjoyable and entertaining. But what we haven't done was pass on the faith, the content of those texts to the next generation.
Ted writes this via email. I've heard your son's classic question, how am I ever going to use this in real life, from my kids. It was my oldest who then later in college gave a great answer to this question long ago. He's now a master's candidate at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Aside from the circular argument of you need to know this so that you can help your own kids when they're in school, I used that one last night, by the way, any area of study that makes you think teaches critical thinking. Without critical thinking, we cannot make appropriate and realistic decisions and proper judgments, and when we are left with others thinking for us, and we will believe anything. Your thoughts there, Shane?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a line from Proverbs, I think it's Proverbs 14, that a simple man does not give thought to his steps, but the wise man evaluates the way of his path, something to that effect. And and there's something also about in that proverb about being duped. I wish I could remember the exact phrase, but that's the approach of the Christian, the wise Christian, who is starting in his approach. His book of Proverbs starts with, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You start with the fear of the Lord. He is the authority over all of us. He imposes things upon us, and we give thought to our steps, and we don't buy into every single thing. We test the spirits, whether they be of God. We think critically about what we hear. We don't simply believe everything. We don't believe myths, Peter says. We are to only receive the truth. So all those things are all Christian approaches to the pursuit of wisdom and discipleship.
With only 30 seconds, is one of the flaws of the Deweyan revolution of education that it has turned education into a mere means to an end rather than a good end in itself? 30 seconds.
That is a very, very wise assessment, yes. Education is itself a vocation. Any person who is in school, who is focusing, should consider that a calling, and it's an end in itself because truth is valuable in itself. Studying, reflecting on God's creation and God's Word is good in and of itself. And the Deweyish approach sort of undermines that, and it says it's only valuable if it's useful.
Shane Rosenthal is producer of the network radio show The White Horse Inn, currently serves on the board of Providence Christian Academy in St. Louis, and he's author of an article in the latest issue of Modern Reformation magazine titled Dewey's Copernican Revolution. We'll post a link to The White Horse Inn at our website, issuesetc.org. Shane, thank you again.
Hey, Todd, always a pleasure. Have a Merry Christmas this year.
And you as well. I remember in seminary being required to memorize things like the Greek alphabet, the Hebrew alphabet, and words and vocabulary and language and all of the structures and the syntax and the grammar, and it was very painful indeed. But I was preparing to be a pastor, and I was going to need to know these things to thoroughly study God's Word. Just think, if Christians had given up the hard work of learning the original languages, we'd never have anything like the Lutheran Study Bible with its scholarship. You could not produce that kind of scholarship in a Lutheran Study Bible without people sitting down. Well, as one of my professors said, the Holy Spirit comes through the seat of the pants, sitting, hard work, doing the scholarship that's necessary with the biblical text. That's what you'll find in the Lutheran Study Bible at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040, the Lutheran Study Bible. When we come back, Colleen Carroll Campbell will join us for the last 10 minutes to talk about the sad story of sexting suicides.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you the new Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, 1600 Gulfview Drive, Suite 230, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the new Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.